Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Diary of a Future President resumes its Disney Plus existence Wednesday with the rollout of Season 2. Creator and showrunner Lana Pena joins me next in an internet radio exclusive. Our middle half hour checks out Staged Managed, the TV series pilot getting big play at TV and film festivals nationwide. Producer-director Guy Nolan will drop by. And if smart TV sets and devices become the heartbeat of the home, leading smart set maker Vizio is out to have that new normal rise and flourish. Listen what's on Vizio's agenda from Vice President Catherine Pond next hour. Also ahead, breaking news, Field of Dreams, the television series, expanding Magnolia Network and launching SmartList at Discovery Plus, Cartoonito's debut, and our classic trivia question. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker and TuneIn Radio. I'm presented over the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Amazon Music, Verbal, and Apple Podcasts. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book or two when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. 81 degrees at the top of the hour, and on this Monday afternoon, we welcome you to a 90-day edition of the program about TV's current and future, now in year 15. Happy to have you aboard. A great group of guests coming your way over the next 90 minutes, and we invite you to be part of the program. It's so simple. Pick up the phone, dial in, and use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio. And our chat room is open for business again. It's SimonApple04 by name. You can find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. While the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Speaker, TuneIn screen. Follow the instructions, other people will be live with you. Alana Pena from Diary of Future President Disney Plus joins us live here in New York after these news notes. And we begin with breaking news over the last half hour. Peacock has approved a series version of the Academy Award-nominated baseball film Field of Dreams starring Kevin Costner. Here's what we know at this time. The Peacock order has been green-lighted. The show is expected to premiere sometime next year, 2023 at the latest. Michael Schur, who is involved with The Good Place, and then before that, Parks and Recreation, will be the writer and executive producer. Lawrence Gordon, one of the original film producers, will be an executive producer on the television version. What we don't know yet is, will there be any involvement by Field of Dreams writer-director Phil Alden Robinson? Right now, Robinson is working on The Good Fight, which he created, which is now in its fifth season, on what was CBS All Access and now Paramount Plus. Once again, Field of Dreams will become a television series next year in 2023 on Peacock. Well, there's plenty of Discovery Plus happening to disclose this afternoon. For starters, Chip and Joanna Gaines' contributions to this mega content enterprise, Magnolia Network, will expand this fall. Three new series are coming to join eight Magnolia offerings that started last month. The new trio are The Katie Button Project, An American Story, and In with the Old. Magnolia remains on track to replace DIY Network on linear cable and satellite next January. Separately, Discovery Plus's greenlight a pair of 75-minute specials about SmartList, the popular podcast co-hosted by Jason Bateman, Will Arnett, and Sean Hayes. Both specials will follow Bateman, Arnett, and Hayes on a six-city U.S. tour before live audiences. Cartoonito, WarnerMedia's new preschool content format, will premiere September 13th on Cartoon Network and HBO Max. Cartoon will play the mini-service weekdays from 6 a.m. to 2 p.m. as both Eastern Pacific Time and weekends from 6 to 8 a.m. Eastern Pacific Time. HBO Max will give Cartoonito its own dedicated space. Original series running in either or both places include Little Ellen, that's based on the small life, or they should say the childhood life of Ellen DeGeneres, Bing, Lucas the Spider, and Mush Mush and the Mushables. Now a trio of quickies. Writer-producer Oyo Rednick has a three-year series creation deal with Paramount Television Studios. Rednick has several series in play, including Paramount Plus's Grease offshoot, Rise of the Pink Ladies. The future of Love Island on CBS is up in the air. Just 1.6 million people watched last night's season finale. And a concert special with the Toronto Symphony Orchestra, produced on the set of the popular Frankie Drake Mysteries on Ovation, premieres on that network September 25th. And that is news notes for today. When people ask what they think of Disney Plus and their scripted offerings, two things usually come to mind. One is the Marvel shows like WandaVision, which just got a slew of Emmy Award nominations a few weeks ago, plus The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, Loki, which just got a second season, and the recently premiered animated series, What If, which will probably go to a second season. Or they think of Star Wars shows. The Mandalorian, also up for a lot of Emmys again, its second season. And Bad Batch, the cartoon series that just got a second season. But believe it or not, there's a lot more to Disney Plus scripted than that. And in fact, some of the non-Star Wars, non-Marvel series have become some of their most highly acclaimed and highest viewed series, like High School Musical, the musical, like Big Shot, Mighty Ducks Game Changers just got a second season, and more recently, The Mysterious Bandit Society and Turner and Hooch, the executive producer of both programs, were on our series earlier this summer. And another one is Diary of a Future President, which is executive produced by Gina Rodriguez, yes, the star of Jane the Virgin. And that series, which has been critically acclaimed, will go into its second season this Wednesday, with all of the episodes for the season being released. Joining us live in an Inner Radio exclusive from New York, the creator and showrunner, Ilana Pena. Ilana, welcome in.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
It is a pleasure, Ilana. So with season one, what were you most surprised about with the audience reaction, and what were you most delighted about?
Honestly, this story, it's the story of a middle school girl who ultimately becomes president of the United States. And I got to say, I was sort of surprised that it was so revolutionary to people. And I know that's a little naive of me, but I just was like, of course, like there's going to be a Latina president down the line. Of course she's going to run the world. And people were like, wow, like, I can't believe we're seeing this. We've never seen this before. And I had a slap in the face moment where I was like, oh yeah, I guess we've never seen that before. And like my kind of sparkly version of what the future could be is not necessarily reality. So that was surprising. And my hope is that shows like this can inspire young Elenas around, you know, the country to maybe run for president one day so that I can be proven right and it can be a reality. and then in terms of delight, I mean, I was super, super delighted by the response of people feeling like seen by the show, whether that's, you know, Latinx families or just teenagers. We have a lot of teenagers who tune into the show and who are extremely devoted to it and that kind of stuff. I mean, I like to make the joke that it took, you know, decades for teenagers to think I was cool because they never thought I was cool when I was a teenager, but now they do with my show. So I was just really, really, you know, just humbled and grateful for the response and for people feeling like such investment in these characters. Like, this is my family. These are my friends.
Have you gotten feedback from girls or young women who are inspired by your series and telling you, yes, I do want to run for president, or I do want to run for the Senate or with the House of Representatives or state or local government?
Yeah, I mean, maybe not that specific, but I, you know, the president part is honestly, like, to me, more of a metaphor. It's just kind of like you can dream as big as you want and you can achieve whatever you want to achieve. And I see it, you know, I honestly see it in, like, a meta way when kids reach out to me and they're like, I want to have my own TV show. I want to be on Disney. Like, what can I do? Because for me, that's my version of being president, is show running the show, because I'm never going to be president. So really, it has been, you know, I think it's like the casual revelation of it, where it's not like, wow, I'm inspired. It's just like, yeah, of course that's going to be me. And how does that happen?
But I understand, though, that the series all came about because you did have that fascination with that aspiration to higher office. How did that come about and when?
Yeah, well, it wasn't, it was more just this, I never wanted to be, you know, president or hold any sort of political office, but I never believed that I couldn't. And that is something that I want to sort of capture in my show. I just sort of believed anything was possible because I was a kid and nobody told me otherwise. For me, my version of that was like, I'm going to be on Broadway or I'm going to have a newspaper column or I'm going to write a lot of books. And so it honestly, you know, the world kind of beats it out of you when you get a little older, and making the show has kind of been me hearkening back to my teenage self and being like, yeah, I can do anything I want to do. And one of those things is, I guess, making a TV show.
And that series, Diary of a Future President, is now on Disney Plus. First season already. Second season begins in its entirety on Disney Plus. We have on smart TV sets and smart devices all over this Wednesday. Ilana Pena is with us, the creator and showrunner of the program. She joins me here in New York this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Sound Ab, I'm with you live from New Haven, New York, 81 degrees at the top of the hour. And if you have a question or comment for Ilana, don't be shy. Make that call, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room. Simon Apple 04 by name. Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, we'll preview a new series on Epics based on a very famous tale by none other than Stephen King called Jerusalem's Lot. The series is called Chapel Wait. It stars and is executive produced by Adrian Brody, the Oscar-winning actor of The Pianist. We'll have one of the other key executive producers, Donald DeLime, with us as our lead guest. We'll also share some thoughts about Saltbox Television. This is a programming service for mature adults that originally was started as something distributed through Senior Citizen Centers. But now it is available on smart TV sets and devices like Roku and Amazon Fire TV. And the service has become more ambitious, including doing original shows, one of them upcoming, their own version of America's Got Talent. You'll meet the people involved with Saltbox Television live Friday, 3:10 Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. How much time did it take for you to turn the idea of Diary of Future President into a series?
Well, I wrote Diary on spec, meaning I just sort of wrote the pilot episode, and I never really had a vision of it being a series. I was a writer's assistant and then a staff writer on Crazy Ex-Girlfriend on the CW at the time, and I just wrote, you know, I had just gotten agents, and I wrote something because I wanted to show them that I had more that I could do and more that I could write, and then, so it really, from like, you know, conception to getting on TV, it was honestly like, this is crazy, and I know this isn't how it normally works, but it was honestly like about a year. No, maybe 2 years. It was 2 years. Because I wrote it, and then we pitched it, and then everything. Yeah, so it was about 2 years, and I wrote the pilot just kind of wanting to write something inspired by my family, and I never imagined it would be on Disney Plus.
Mm-hmm. How did Disney Plus, by the way, pick up the series? What made them do it?
You know, I think it was the kind of thing they... So Diary is one of the only, original shows not based on IP, and they're looking to fill a pretty specific mandate because they have the Disney brand and they have these families tuning in. And I think it was kind of like a perfect storm with Gina Rodriguez, who was our producer and who, you know, was going to play the president, and a show that kind of told the story of like a modern day Disney princess, you know, in terms of a Disney president. And it just kind of, I think that it really resonated with them. I think it's hard to, you know, hit all of those marks when you're going into pitch for a network. And we didn't for other networks, but Disney Plus was looking for exactly what we were providing.
Mm-hmm. How long did it take to find Tess Romero, the child who plays the future president as a child?
Tess is amazing. It took us a while to find her. You know, we saw a bunch of kids, and I was feeling, I think, kind of precious about it because she was playing a version of myself younger, and it's really hard, you know, to play a character who, like, makes a bunch of mistakes but is still so endearing and has big dreams but is also failing, and it's really, like, a very nuanced, complicated role that, you know, I know adults that couldn't pull it off, and we found Tess a few months in. She came from New York, actually, and she did a tape. We had seen a bunch of in-person auditions because this was pre-COVID, but Tess did a tape, and she just, like, you know, jumped off the screen, and she provided, like, a nuance to this character. And it was for me, honestly, it was a moment of letting go where I was like, oh, this isn't me. This is Elena. This is this character, and Tess is going to bring Tess to it. And she knocked it out of the park.
Mm-hmm. And once you got Tess set as the main character, how long did it take to not only build the family around her on screen, but also the family off screen, writers, directors, Gina, yourself, mm-hmm. to establish the framework of the program, establish the direction her character goes, her family goes, and all the other surroundings?
Yeah, well, in terms of the on-screen family, we were kind of doing it all in tandem because we didn't shoot a pilot. We just went straight to series. So we were lucky enough to be able to have Tess and Charlie, who plays her brother, fly to L.A. to sort of do a test screening, the two of them together. So So it was not only like, oh my God, these two are perfect for these characters. It was these two have amazing chemistry. These two play off each other in such a brilliant way. And we really kind of all clicked as a family. And we were able to do the same thing with Selene, who plays their mom, and Michael Weaver, who plays the mom's boyfriend. And we were able to see them play off each other and be like, oh, this is, they're not just amazing individually, but they're amazing together. And then you kind of just hit the ground running. I mean, we got a writer's room together in a couple months. And it was really important that we have writers from different backgrounds, different ethnicities, and also, just, you know, different life experiences. Because, yeah, this show is inspired by my childhood, but it is infused with the stories of all of our writers and our directors. You know, we have really, really incredible directors last season and this season, same with our writers. And, you know, it's always this dance of, like, scheduling, but also, you know, who's going to bring the most to the show. And I feel like with the writers and directors, it's a perfect storm. I could not have asked for a better group of people, and I'm really excited for everyone to see what we made.
Mm-hmm. Alana, how did the first season deal with the whole idea of where you go depends to some degree on where you come from? How does Latino culture, how does the family structure, how does the experiences that you showcase with this person, a child, guide the future president, as played by Gina Rodriguez?
Yeah, I mean, so there's a version of this show where, like, instead of her not knowing she's going to be president, she, like, knows exactly what she wants to be, and she makes a big chart and crosses off every, you know, item as she's going about it. But this is a girl who doesn't know. So we have the, like, gift as writers of letting everything in her life be a thing that kind of, like, adds to the bucket of her inspiration for one day wanting to do this. And for me as a Cuban American, I mean, you know, my dad came here from Cuba when he was 3 years old, and I just sort of grew up hearing from my family on that side about, you know, how much I could do, because I was in a country that was free, and I was in a country that, you know, I could do what I set my mind to. And, you know, I think that is a common thing with kids of immigrants, is this, like, desire to work really hard and having your parents, like, push you to be the best you can be and to try as hard as possible. So I think that is infused in it. But also, you know, just every single experience she has, we go into each episode being like, okay, what's something that a good leader needs to have? And then we kind of work backwards from there. And sometimes it's an episode about her joining the school musical, or sometimes it's an episode about her, you know, making friendship bracelets at a carnival. But it's all tying into, like, what kind of a person will be the best leader. So it's her culture, it's her ethnicity, it's her family, it's the support of her tight-knit family, but it's also just everything that she's encountering and experiencing along the way.
You came into this, Alana, from working on a cutting-edge series like Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. Gina comes in from being both a public face and later a producer on Jane the Virgin, another cutting-edge series. And I'm wondering, with the background of that nature, doing cutting-edge programming, how does that chime in with working with Gina on this series and the kind of environment that you try to bring to have this show be as cutting-edge as what you or Gina has done before?
Yeah, I think for me and Gina, it was always a no-brainer that this show would be about, like, a complicated young woman who, you know, was failing and learning and messy and growing, and that you see that in Jane Villanueva and you see that in Rebecca Bunch. And both of us, you know, had the privilege of kind of growing up on these shows that honored the mess and honored the journey. So I think both of us, it was, you know, never really a discussion. It was just, and same with Gabby, Elena's mother, like, just presenting these complicated women as three-dimensional characters, you know, the same way that Jane and Rebecca were presented. And, you know, I also, like, I know that Diary is a show that kids enjoy, and I love that kids love it, and it's so important to me. But also, I never thought of it as a kid's show. I thought of it as a show for everybody. So we never went into, you know, writing these stories talking down to the audience, you know, trying to be preachy or trying to, like, hit on a certain topic just to, like, you know, speak to the kids of tomorrow. We were really just trying to tell authentic, funny stories. The same way that I went into the Crazy Ex writers room, and the same way that I know that they approached it on Jane the Virgin. So, you know, it's not like all of our writers came from young audience backgrounds. It's not like, you know, we had some sort of mandate to change the youth of today, tomorrow. We were really just trying to tell funny, good stories. And I think we did that.
Diary of Future Presidents Season 2 begins this Wednesday on Disney Plus, available on most smart TV sets and smart devices. And we are talking live with the creator, executive producer, and showrunner, Ilana Pena. She's here in New York, and she joins me here in New York this afternoon and this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Happy Year Aboard to wherever you are. Simon Abbott with you live from New York. If you have a question or comment, many minutes with Ilana, make that call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room. Simon Apple 04 by name. In our next half hour, our classic trivia question of the week. Second week, we're offering this question. And now we have two prizes in play. And we'll let you know what they are later on toward the top of the hour. And by the way, coming up our next half hour, we will introduce you to a TV series pilot that's been going on all over the country at TV and film festivals called Stage Manage. The producer director, Guy Noll, will be with us. And then from Vizio, one of the top smart TV set makers in the world, we've got Vice President Catherine Pond. And we'll find out from her what is up and coming at that smart TV set maker. As it turns out, quite a lot. That's all coming up in the next hour right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. So stay tuned. And by the way, keep your pencil paper handy, because if you take down our question and you win, two nice prizes for you. So it always pays to win. Ilana, you're now in the sophomore season. And always when you have a first season and you're making it, getting the premise together and so forth, what did you see as the challenge of the sophomore season, especially dealing with the coronavirus pandemic as you're filming it?
Oh, my God, yeah. We shot in the height of COVID. We started shooting in October right after lockdown. And it was, you know, we had to sort of make concessions, whether it was the location or how many people needed to be in a scene. But I honestly challenge as like a gift, because it forces you to kind of drill down in each scene and be like, okay, what do we need to say in this scene? How do we need to say it? What's the most important thing to get out? And usually it doesn't need 40 background extras, or it doesn't need to go on location. And I'm so proud of our crew and our amazing line producer, who really everyone stepped up and they were like, how can we make this as strong as possible? And when I watch the show, because I've seen it like a billion times now, it's better. It's honestly like the challenge has made it better. And then in terms of the writing, you know, you just want to make sure that as the show grows and the audience grows, the characters evolve and the storylines evolve. And I think our biggest change was taking, we were in the White House in two episodes last season. We saw sort of where Elena ends up. And this season we realized, you know, what audiences are excited about is Elena and her world and her family and her friends, and they don't necessarily want to leave that and go to the future. So we were like, how can we bring future Elena into the present? And we created a whole new device, which is, it's always, you know, a bit of a challenge creating a device, let alone creating it in a second season when audiences sort of have their idea of what the show is already. But Gina sort of acts as Chess's, the voice inside her head, the adult, her kind of acting as her conscience. And I think that Chess and Gina did such an incredible job. And to, you know, to the audience's credit, they've seen the trailer. They sort of know the breakdown, and nobody is deterred. Everybody is on board, and I'm really excited for everyone to see it.
Mm-hmm. As much as you can divulge, how do the characters grow?
Yeah, so season one, our Elena sort of learns and has this realization like, oh, wait, I can be a leader. I think I might want to be a leader. And then season two is kind of her realizing what it means to be a leader. And she sort of goes in guns blazing, thinking that being a leader is all about herself. And the season is kind of her arc in realizing what leadership really is about, that it's not all about you. And then for her brother, Bobby, you know, we laid the groundwork for this story where he's having a revelation about his identity and his sexuality. And then in season two, we really dig deep into that. And we have this character sort of not only have a revelation with his identity, but also learn the value of opening up and sharing himself with others. And as he's kind of having his coming out journey, he's also having a journey of like, oh, I can share things. I don't have to be so internal. And then on the grown-up side, you know, we have Gabby's boyfriend, Sam, move in with the family. And I really wanted to explore, I come from a blended family, and I wanted to explore that, you know, from the adult's point of view. I feel like we always see on TV kids being like, I don't want a stepdad. And the reality is a lot of times, or at least in my life, I was really game and I was really excited and all the sort of, you know, conflict came after and all this, and that there was conflict, like in terms of how do you be a parent together? How do you, you know, justify your own choices, whether that's where you keep the bread, if it's in the refrigerator or on the counter, or how you discipline your kids when you're coming from two totally different mindsets. So it was important to sort of explore that in a way that I feel like I haven't seen before.
Incidentally, if leadership is not about you, what is it about?
Well, without giving too much away, because this is Elena's entire arc season two, she sort of realizes, she goes in thinking it's all about her, and she's not really thinking about the people she would be representing. She's not thinking about the people around her. And I think that, and I've learned this as a showrunner, that to be the best leader is to lift other voices up. Like, my show is not about me. My show is about my cast, my crew, my writers, my directors, producers. And that's sort of what Elena comes to realize, that being a leader is not about her. It's about everybody that she's lifting up. And it's about how she can use the talents that she's sort of realizing she has to lift other voices, to bring other people into the spotlight, to celebrate others instead of celebrating herself.
Elena, have you given any thought to how long do you want to lift people up with this program? How long do you want this series to run? I'm even thinking about, like, what is next for you? What is the next series you create?
I want this show to run as long as they'll let me do it. I think that seeing Elena go through high school would be such a gift, and to be able to sort of see her future kind of come into, become more clear for her. And I think, you know, she doesn't know she wants to be president yet, and maybe the season will end when she has that revelation, when she sort of vocalizes the thing that the audiences know. And then for me, I'm lucky enough to have an overall deal at CBS Studios, which is the studio behind Diary, and I have a comedy in development with them. I'm supervising a drama from one of the Diary writers with them. I have a couple film projects, and this season on Diary, I directed for the first time, so I've got a few directing things on the horizon that I'm really excited for.
She does it all, and incidentally, you got to love the fact that the show is produced by CBS Studios in association with, get this, I Can and I Will Productions. How about that? Diary of Future President, second season begins this Wednesday on smart TV sets and smart devices through Disney+. And for more details about the service, not just the series, but the service overall, here's where you go online, www.disneyplus.com. That's www.disneyplus, that's P-L-U-S, not the plus sign, disneyplus.com. Diary of Future President, season two, begins Wednesday. Creator, executive producer, director of an episode, and showrunner, Elena Pena, thank you very, very much for coming on. It's been a delight having you with us this half hour. Congratulations on season two. Hopefully many more to come, and all the best to you, Gene, and everybody involved.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Same here, Elena. Take care. Enjoy the week.
You too. Bye-bye.
Elena Pena from Diary of a Future President joining us live here in New York. More tomorrow, I'll be televised coming your way, but for some fine words from terrific people at audible.com. Are you looking for a great way, especially in light of the coronavirus pandemic, to teach your kids the basics, like the ABCs? Well, there's now a new audiobook that does it in story and song. It's called ABC, Learn Your Alphabet, and it's produced especially for audible.com by Audible Studios. And you can get that now with a trial run with audible.com. Remember, audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital entertainment, information, and inspiration. There's over 200,000 titles to choose from, and you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on right now, at Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tune Radio, our podcast affiliates, and our new website, tomorrowbetelevised.podsite.io. What you got to do is sign up at audibletrial.com/televised, and you get one free audiobook, 1 month trial, plus health and wellness information while it lasts, and great customer service from Audible's parent, audibleamazon.com. And remember, if you're already an Amazon Prime customer, you get two audiobooks to try for your trial of one, and one of them can be from the growing catalog of Audible Originals. We are talking about original audio productions and podcast series, best of Broadway or Broadway regional theater, and great one-woman and one-man performances. So how about making today the day that you discover how Audible.com can transform the way you hear the world? Makes a great gift for you or someone you love. When we come back, we'll talk to the producer-director of a TV series pilot that's getting traction at film and TV festivals all over the place. It's called Stage Manage. Guy Nolan's the producer-director. He will join me live from Los Angeles after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. Connect the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tunein.com. Together reaching over 60 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Don't forget, tomorrow and every weekday, it's Kings in the Morning, Jay King and crew, ready to entertain, empower, and inspire you. That's tomorrow, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific, Kings in the Morning, right here on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best VTR 24/7 at youtube.com. Welcome back to half hour number two of Tomorrow Be Televised, 9th edition coming your way on this Monday afternoon. Simon Adam, I'm with you live from New York, 81 degrees, top of the hour. More great guests coming your way in the 60 minutes ahead. If you have a question or comment for them, ring our phone, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And coming up later this half hour, before the top of the hour, our classic trivia segment, two prizes now in play if you get the correct answer first. If you're a regular to this program, you know that we love to spotlight new talent, especially talent making TV series pilots and having them showcased at TV and more often film festivals around the country. My next guest is the producer director of a pilot that's making the rounds of a lot of film and TV festivals lately. It's called Stage Manage. Its latest stop will be the Dances with Film Festival taking place next month in Los Angeles. Joining us live from Los Angeles, producer director Guy Nolan. Guy, happy to have you with us.
Hey, thanks for having me, Simon.
Guy, how long has Stage Manage been on the circuit for, and what are people saying about it?
Well, so far, we just started out. We've been doing pretty good. Thanks for the plug. We've had about 2 months on the circuit so far, and so far we've had about a 50% acceptance rating, which is, for those who know the circuit, is a pretty good rating. So. We've had a pretty good run so far, and so far people are really liking it.
Incidentally, why are you showcasing it both at film festivals and at TV festivals, like, for example, Series Fest in Denver or Norfolk, which just recently happened in Long Island?
That's a good question. The good thing about having a pilot is that it can function as both a television pilot and as a short film. And so I'm able to submit it to many festivals, even the ones that don't have a TV media section in their programming.
Do you find it interesting that more and more film festivals are taking TV pilots or are doing special competitions for TV pilots, like Gina Davis's Bentonville Film Festival that was on a week or so ago, or Dancing with Films, which I understand started out as a film festival, and when I saw the program about a week or so ago, it's like as much about television as it is about film.
Yeah, it's huge. I think that's the way the industry's going right now. Especially with the past year and a half of the pandemic and everybody, you know, being kind of locked down, the whole streaming and television and binging series and all that kind of stuff has really made this huge comeback with television. And a lot of people are realizing now that when before, if you had a book or a series or a big story that you wanted to tell, you were always kind of limited to just, you know, hour and a half to 2 hours to tell the entire story. Or, you know, if it was a great book, you know, having to adapt all of that information down into 2 hours and how limiting that was. And now we've kind of come to this new apex of entertainment where we don't have to do that anymore. And we can do a 10-hour story broken up into one-hour segments. And I think audiences are really gravitating towards that. I started out as myself in kind of the filmmaking arena and have also gravitated towards television myself just because there's so much more freedom as a storyteller in the medium of television and streaming and being able to do multiple episodes in order to tell your entire story. So I think I'm really happy that's kind of the way things are going. I think that really opens a lot of doors for the filmmakers out there.
So, Guy, how did Stage Manage happen?
Oh, Simon, that's a long story. All right. How much time do I got? Let me give you the Reader Digest version here. So basically what happened was, you know, my whole life kind of growing up, I was always involved in theater. I was, you know, in the theater department in high school and, you know, president of the Thespian Club and all that stuff. And so I'd always kind of kept one foot in the realm of theater just because that was my first love. Even though in college I went off to film school and got a graduate degree in screenwriting, I always kind of loved that whole area of entertainment. And I fell away from it for a long time. And just right before the pandemic hit, I had decided to get back into theater, into musical theater. And I went off on a whim and auditioned for a show. And I landed the lead. I wasn't expecting it, but it's what happened. And it kind of started me on this journey over the next few months of really diving back into musical theater. And I thought, gosh, I really love this. I really miss this part of my life, having been working, you know, behind the camera and doing other things. And the last show that I did, which was the West Coast premiere of Kinky Boots at 3D Theatricals, one of the guys that was in the show had just sold a pilot. And I said to him, I said, you know, can I take a look at it? And he said, sure. He showed me the pilot. And I looked at it and I said, I want to do something like this. I really want to do something like this, but what can it be about? And I'm standing, having this thought as I'm standing stage, you know, getting ready to go out. And that was kind of the apex of it. It just kind of all hit me. It's like, something needs to be done. We need a show about this. We need a show about theater, just about community theater and about, you know, the comedy, the inherent comedy and the characters that come along with this whole life. Right after that, the pandemic hit, and I went, everything shut down. I was literally going into my next show, first night of rehearsal, and everything shut down. And I said, I've got nothing left to do for the next few months, so I guess I got no excuse but to write this thing. So that's kind of how it all started. I wrote it, and then the pandemic kept going, so I said, well, let's find some money and let's make it, because nobody's got anything going on. So we had a bunch of friends that were looking for something to do because there was nothing happening, and they just wanted to stay sharp. And so I just kind of brought a bunch of artists together, and we made this thing, and I started showing it, and people loved it. And I said, okay, well, I think we've got something here, so let's start trying to get it out there and see if we can build some momentum with this.
We're finding that a lot of TV series pilots and also Proming Services are now exploring ways that have become quite unique in the last couple of years. Blockchain, cryptocurrency, crowdfunding, equity crowdfunding, NFTs to get themselves off the ground. Was that Aiden Venture Capital now? Did you go through any of those routes to make the pilot happen, or did you do
no.
Bootstrapping, you know, go to your family, go to friends you know to get the money?
Yeah, no, you know, this one I totally self-funded because I had done that route before on other passion projects where I did crowdfunding I had done or going to friends and family and asking for, you know, people to help out. And so I kind of exhausted all of that. And, I'd made a couple other projects that way. And this one, it just felt like, you know, this one was one that I really wanted to do myself. Now, coincidentally, this was like, you know, the first time in probably the past 20 years because of the pandemic that I was eligible for unemployment. And so I said, turned to my wife and I said, what do you think? Do you think maybe I can just take that money that I'm making in unemployment and just turn around and invest it in this project? And just that will be what I use. And she, you know, being the beautiful human being that she is, said, I think that's a great idea. Why don't you do that? And so that's kind of how I paid for it, you know. Coincidentally, this pandemic was the whole reason that this thing happened, and it's what paid for it, too. So everything was out of pocket. Everything was out of my own pocket on this.
Guy Nolan, the producer director of Stage Manage, is our guest this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised, joining us live from L.A. Stage Manage has been screening at various film and TV festivals around the country, and their next big stop is next month at the annual Dances with Films Festival. And Guy, as I said, is with us right now, and you can talk to him. And how you do that, you pick up the phone and make a call, 646-652-2906, or use that chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Again, Friday on Toronto Be Televised, we'll speak with the executive producer of Chapel Waits, the new epics drama that adapts one of the most popular short stories by Stephen King, Jerusalem's Lot. Adrian Brody, the Academy Award-winning actor of The Pianist, is the star and also an executive producer. We'll speak with the other key executive producer, Donald DeLine. Also, we'll introduce you to Soapbox Television. It's a programming service that started a few years ago, distributed to only senior citizen centers. But this service aimed at mature adults and now has bigger ambitions. It's now being presented on smart TV sets and devices like Roku and Amazon Fire TV, and it's doing more of the original programming, including an upcoming talent competition, a.k.a. like America's Got Talent. You'll meet the executives behind this unique venture, Soapbox TV, Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Guy, get into the plot of Stage Manage. What is it all about? What kind of production is happening and the characters trying to put it together?
Well, it's a character-driven mockumentary. I like to say that it's a cross between The Office and Waiting for Guffman. And it's basically about this little community theater in the suburbs of Los Angeles who's struggling to put on shows. All the shows that they put on are basically knockoffs of major Broadway shows. They just kind of rewrite them and tweak the names so that they don't have to pay royalties. We kind of pick up with them in the pilot where they're having their auditions for their next show, My Fair Lassie. They find out in the middle of these auditions that they're going to have to really pull off this show. This is going to have to be a successful show, or they're going to wind up having to close the doors on this theater. So that just kind of kicks off this particular series and the first season of this series, in that, you know, the struggle to make this show, since all the shows in the past have kind of been, you know, failures in the sense of box office or any kind of acclaim. This is going to be the first one that they're actually going to have to put some effort into. And, of course, it's the cast of wacky characters that you find in any sitcom and or community theater, for that matter. It's their struggle to pull this together for the first time and pull off a successful show.
Before the next question, I just got to ask it. Did you say My Fair Lassie? Are we talking about, like, a musical about the famous canine?
No. It could be. Actually, we haven't written that far, so it could be. We've only got the first two episodes written. But it's, you know, it's, again, it's the playoff of, My Fair Lady, and they've rewritten the show, like I said, so they don't have to pay royalties. So what that show is about, honestly, the characters haven't even written the play yet either. So it could be. There could be a collie involved in that.
You know, in recent years, Guy, we've seen a number of series that try to showcase the backstage of a musical or try to do something in a musical format. You have shows like Smash that Steven Spielberg did for 2 years, The Making of a Grover musical, Glee, of course, about Glee Club, Central Park, which is an animated musical series on Apple TV Plus, and then just recently we had Schmigadoon, sort of the Brigadoon Broadway spinoff, which I have to say is turning out to be one of the sleeper shows of the year. Whoever's writing the songs is fantastic. Just put songs on YouTube in sing-along style, so watching them, you can actually sing along with the show. Great cast, too, with Alan Cummings, Christian Chenoweth, the woman who's going to play Anita in the Steven Spielberg version of West Side Story coming out in December. And I'm curious how ambitious you wanted this pilot. I mean, did you want to do original songs, original choreography as part of the pilot?
Yeah, well, I think so, yeah, obviously. But, you know, it's spoof, right? You know, I don't see it as being not like Schmigadoon, you know, where or even Smashed or, you know, even those kind of really big. This is community theater. And I think the comedy comes in that the amateur nature of community theater and trying to write your own shows and trying to do your own original music and choreography. I think it's going to be on that level, you know, whatever we do, and that's where the comedy lies. You know, I'm so thrilled that Schmigadoon is doing well. You know, I mean, because that's just, as you know, a theater arts person, I always love that. I love Smash. I loved, you know, Glee. I loved all those things, and that only helps. That only helps the arts when those kinds of things get traction. And obviously, it's great timing for us. You know, Schmigadoon takes off, you know, I'm more than happy to jump on the coattails of a great piece like that and say, hey, yeah, let's ride this train and get as many viewers as we can and fans of our show that like this kind of thing, because there's a lot of people out there, obviously, or they wouldn't be making these shows. But there's a big audience for this, and there are people who are really hungry for this kind of content. And so that's what thrills me, especially since I have such a love for that whole genre.
Two quick schmigadoon notes. One, if you have not seen the video of Christian Chenoweth's number done to Tapeshte or Pashte of Trouble, the famous song that Rob Preston did in The Music Man, see it. It's an extraordinary number. One take, one camera. And they got it on the first take. And the other is this schoolroom segment with the woman I mentioned from West Side Story plays Anita. She is a dynamite singer, dancer, actress. And it's a number with kids tap dancing on their desks. Really, really super. So check it out on YouTube. And you can sing along with both of those sequences. They are amazing. If they do not win Emmy Awards next year for best songs or choreography or whatever, something is up. How long did it take to make the pilot, and how did the coronavirus pandemic impact the way this was filmed or taped?
Oh, gosh. Filmmaker can tell you that tried to work during the pandemic will tell you it was challenging, to say the least. I mean, it was, especially as an independent filmmaker. This was a relatively quick process comparatively. I mean, a lot of other projects that I've produced and put together, take, years to develop and find the money and all that kind of stuff. And then to put through the festival circuit. This one happened relatively quickly in comparison. Like I said, once the pandemic hit, I sat down and wrote it. I wrote it in about, all in a month I took to write it, 30-page script. And then I started, then my first draft, I got out to all my screenwriter friends and said, hey, give me notes. And any screenwriter who goes through this knows that, your hardest audience are your own friends who work in the same industry. They'll tear you apart. And this was kind of the first time that I'd ever done this where the response back from my peers was like overwhelmingly positive on the first draft. Usually you just get, a slew of notes, and this is what, I don't understand this, and this is what you need to change, and this was the first time that the notes coming back were very few and far between, and I thought, wow, I wasn't expecting that. I this is something very unique. And so I went back and took some of the great notes that I got and tweaked the whole thing and sent it out again, and it was getting this really great response from people who weren't even theater people. They were just, film and TV people. And so that's when I said, all right, I need to do this. And so long story short, I put together the cast, and we were – that the script writing happened, right up to about June. And we had a shoot date set for September gave ourselves a couple months to kind of get things together. And then there was a little hiccup with the theater that we were using, because that was the other problem, is trying to find theaters that would – all the theaters were closed down. So we thought, all right, this should be fairly easy to get a theater to shoot in because they're not doing anything, right? I mean, it's effectively illegal for them to be in business right now. So they would want some extra money to keep the lights on. We're not going to bring anybody in except for the cast and crew. There's not going to be an audience or anything. And I was just amazed at how many of these small theaters just would not budge on their pre-COVID rental prices. and I said, we're just going to be in here for a few days. I'll give you a couple grand. That's a great deal, right? Because it's that or nothing. And I was just amazed at how many people would be like, no, our rate is $2,000 a day no matter what. I'm like, okay. Anyway, all that to say, we finally found a couple places that, saw the reason in opening their doors. And we were able to go and shoot it, and we shot it in a week. From probably about May, first putting pen to paper and got the final shot off in October. And then I started editing it and had it done by the end of the year. So all in, it was probably, you know, 7 months from conception to finished product.
Mm-hmm. Did you ask the actors and other people on the production team to contribute to the table their experiences in community theater and incorporate them into the script or into your directing?
Oh, yeah. That was the greatest part. That was the most fun for me, is that the main characters in this piece are all people that I worked with in theater. They're all theater actors. They're all theater performers. They all have this love for this theater. So the first show that I had come back to do that I had mentioned before was written and directed in a community theater by the main character in Stage Managed, Carter Thomas. Young guy, really talented, and he plays the director of My Fair Lassie, of this fictional community theater. And him and his sister and a bunch of people that were in that first show that I did coming back were in my pilot. And so what I did is I said, let's sit down in this pilot. I want to make this pilot, and this is what I want to do. Let's sit down. So we all got on Zoom, and we just sat down, and I said, this first episode, this is what this series is about. This is who the characters are, and they're all based on each one of these people sitting in this meeting. And I said, now, these are your characters, and this is where I see them doing. And I think this first episode needs to be the introduction of this show. What do we do? Let's start talking about that. And then we just started. It was basically a writer's room where we just started throwing around ideas, and it was all of these performers that are in the actual pilot that sat there with me, and they all became co-producers with me on the project. And they all threw in their own ideas and their own funny and their own jokes and their own everything, and we came up with this idea of, you know what, let's make it the audition. It's the audition for this show. And we started working out bits, and we were able to come up with kind of a structure of what this first pilot would be. And I went, that's great. And then I went away and wrote it. So they were absolutely instrumental in helping me come up with this whole first episode.
Yeah. Guy, are you getting any nibbles to your pilot from anybody? And if not, ideally, where would you like to see this pilot become a series?
Where? I'm not picky there, Simon. we just want to get it done. So far this is still relatively new into the process, so we haven't generated enough buzz. That's why I'm talking to you. People like you that are, you know, doing this great service for us, new up and coming artists, really appreciate that, because this is how we get the word out and try and get that buzz going. So far we've out of the first 14 festivals, like I said, we had a 50% acceptance rate. So we were in seven festivals, in the last 2 months, and two major ones, Series Fest and Dances with Films. And so we're hoping that this is what's going to kind of start to generate a little bit of buzz and get people interested. And, you know, obviously, you know, the dream is to get it to series. Now, you know, we also really understand what's involved in that and how difficult that is, and, you know, how much of an uphill battle that's going to be. But if, you know, even if we can get, you know, find good representation and find people who can open doors for us, that's a good thing too. But as for who, obviously the dream is network, but, you know, listen, Netflix or Hulu or any streamer would be great too. We're not really picky at this point. We just want to get it made.
The pilot is Stage Managed, and its next stop on the film and TV festival circuit is Dances with Films, which is next month in Los Angeles. I believe it is in person and possibly virtual as well. So want more details about both the pilot and about the other pilots that will be presented there and the festival overall, here's where you go online, danceswithfilms.com. That's danceswithfilms.com. Takes place next month in Los Angeles, and we'll keep you posted about how well Stage Managed does, and as soon as we find out if it does become a series and where it will land, we will, of course, let you know and bring Guy back on the program. Guy Nolan, producer director of Stage Managed, thank you again for joining us. Congratulations on all the success you're having on the circuit, And hopefully we'll have you back. And next time you do, you get that series.
I would love for that to happen, Simon. Really appreciate you having me on and really appreciate what you're doing for everybody.
It is a pleasure. Thank you so much for the acknowledgement. I deeply appreciate it. Guy, take care. All the greatest. Have a wonderful week.
All right. You too. Bye-bye.
Guy Nolan, producer, director of Stage Manage, joining us live from Los Angeles. Now it's time for our classic trivia question of the week. Second week in a row that we're asking this question. We're going for our second weekly winner in 3 weeks. And if you are first with the correct answer, we now have two prizes in play. We've got the unofficial Downton Abbey cookbook based upon the famous PBS series and movie. And now we have, from Tiffany & Company, we have a picture frame, a small picture frame that can go to you if you know the answer to this question. Name the two actors who played Colt, the title character, on the popular Western series Colt 45, was on ABC from 1957 and 1960. In those three seasons, two people played the Colt role. Name them. Again, name the two people who played Colt on Colt 45. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Please enclose your name and where you're emailing from. If you're first with the correct answer, you'll win that small Tiffany & Company picture frame plus the unofficial Downton Abbey cookbook. Two prizes for the entry of one. If we don't get a winner by the end of today, we will post the question tomorrow morning on Facebook at Simon Applebaum and on Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's at UBC Simon TWBT. Remember, in order to win, you got to play in, so do so. And, of course, all the very best. Last Friday, we had an amazing two-hour episode for you. We had two guests talk about the fallout of NBC Universal's Olympic coverage. And we also had the executive producer of Heels, Peter Siegel, who also directed the pilot episode that was on last night on Starz, got great critical attention. And most importantly, we celebrated the 100th birthday of one of the great TV visionaries of all time, the creator producer of Star Trek, Gene Roddenberry, with his son, Rod, who joined us from the Star Trek convention in Las Vegas that wrapped up over the weekend. Because we wanted to give so much time to Rod to express how Roddenberry, his father, is being commemorated, and what he's doing to preserve his man's wonderful diversity legacy and TV legacy, we did not have an opportunity, because we're running short on time, to let you know how you can stay in touch with Rod Roddenberry and find out about his project. So all you got to do is go to www.roddenberry.com. That's www.roddenberry.com. www.roddenberry.com. And again, I want to thank Rod for taking time out of the festival in Las Vegas to join us. And I hope everybody in Las Vegas had a great time with Rod and all the Star Trek people. And if you didn't hear that episode on Friday, and a lot of people did in different places, why don't you check out our wonderful homepage, blogtalkradio.com. It's www.blogtalkradio.com. Check out the podcast version. It's already available on iTunes, on Apple TV, on Apple Podcasts, Spreaker Podcast, TuneIn.com, the iRadio Podcast Network, Verbal, as well as Amazon Music. And remember that we have a website now. You can also get the episode there, too. It's tomorrowwillbetelevised.podsite.io. It's www.tomorrowwillbetelevised.com. Or just tomorrowbetelevised.podsite.io. And remember, the current episode is on the top half of the screen. Click and you get it. Bottom half of the screen, recent episodes. You also leave a comment as well at the bottom of the home screen. And we do appreciate what you have to say, because we like to say here, what you say matters. And we do respond to your comments within 24 hours. You are listening to Tomorrow Be Televised, the promo about the Tube. In case you're new, we come your way Mondays and Fridays, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker and Tune Radio via simulcast from New York. We're now in year 15. And again, if you want to check out our recent episodes, go to that homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Remember, we're coming your way on Friday. We will bring you the executive producer with Adrian Brody of the new epic series based on Stephen King work, Capelweight, Donald DeLine. Plus, we'll showcase the Senior Citizen Service Saltbox TV, now available on Roku, Amazon Fire TV, and other smart TV sets and devices. Speaking of smart TVs, coming up after the top of the hour, we will go live to California and speak with one of the key vice presidents and one of the top smart TV makers in the nation and the world, Vizio, Catherine Pond. She is next after we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. It's the best internet radio in the galaxy, www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tune.com. Together, reaching more than 60 million people around the world every month and growing. Remember, every Wednesday night, BTR brings you the Independent Music Showcase, one of the few shows of its kind on all of radio. That's the Independent Music Showcase this Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to our final half hour of this 90th edition of Tomorrow Be Televised on a beautiful Monday afternoon here in New York. Simon Applebaum with you live from the metro area. 81 degrees at the top of the hour. We welcome those of you just joining us at the top of the hour. You're in for a great treat, I believe, a great guest coming your way. And we invite you to be part of the program, as always. Just give us a call, 646-652-2906, 646-652-2906. The numbers get anywhere. You'll catch us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio. Don't forget our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And remember, you can connect those using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio Speaker Tune screen. Follow the instructions. Other people will be live with you. And now joining us live from Irvine, California, one of the top executives at one of the top smart TV set makers in the nation and the world, from Vizio, Vice President Catherine Pond. Catherine, welcome in.
Hi, Simon. Thanks so much for having me today.
It is a pleasure, Catherine. Thank you for making the time. Back in May, when your company had its first Interactive Ad Bureau Digital Content Newfront, your CEO, Chief Executive Officer, said the following: we can see TV becoming the hub of the home again like never before. How close we are to that?
Oh, man. Vizio really, really believes that we can be the heartbeat of the home, the center of the home. And I think what you are seeing, you know, we always used to say, future of TV is streaming. We're already there. It's not the future anymore. It's today. And you're already seeing that our device is in the center of the home. You know, with our new Vizio voice remote, we're realizing a lot of that happening already today. You know, the TV is the one device in the household that really isn't moving around a lot when it comes to screens. You know, it's staying right there, and it has the ability, and it should be, the opportunity for families and individuals to really kind of create that environment with the interactive experiences and really just use it as the center of their day.
Where is Vizio at in terms of usage of your product? At a time when we now have about 85% of all U.S. households have a smart TV set or a smart TV device, they're watching tens of billions of hours of smart TV content and apps. We know this is how people are watching all the mega content services that have popped up in the last decade, the first generation of Netflix to Amazon, the second with all the Plus services from HBO Max to Paramount Plus. Where is Vizio at in terms of bringing all that to people?
Yeah, so we just hit 14 million active accounts. We just announced that viewing hours have reached almost 3.5 billion last quarter, which was up 35% from the quarter before. So really strong engagement on our platform, and we're reaching millions and millions of consumers here in the U.S.
And with the IAB Newfront, which was your first appearance there, and also the first appearance of a number of other smart TV sets and devices, Samsung, Roku, others, Fubo TV, multi-channel bundles as well. What kind of fallout did you have from your appearance there?
I think what we had was we saw incredible engagement from our brand partners, from our agencies, from our content partners. I mean, overall, the sentiment was very, very positive to see Vizio there, to see us presenting in that way, to see us talking about our ad strategy and some of our unique capabilities in market, which, you know, you and I can get into some more today. I mean, overall, the sentiment was resoundingly positive.
Hmm. Now, I understand the SmartCast, which is one of your major features of your set, added about 30 channels to the service just in the last 3 months alone. What kind of services did you add, and how much did audience input dictate what services you carry?
I love this question. Mostly because I'm so, so passionate about how we're using data to make a difference for our consumers. So, yes, we added over 30 channels again last quarter. We added 30 channels the quarter before that. And most recently, we actually announced that we were over 260 channels live for our Watch Free Plus offering. And to kind of hit the second part of your question there, and, you know, what are we looking at, and how are we making sure that what we're bringing to the platform is interesting? we are taking every data point that we possibly have, obviously in a privacy-compliant way, first-party data, and we're using those to gain insights into what our consumers' preferences are. So that's everything from, you know, understanding, do they like comedy? Do they like movies more than TV shows? Do they like horror? Do they like drama? But we also, because of our ACR data, which is powered by Inscape, we have the ability to look at linear TV viewership as well and use those insights to make sure that we're pulling in the content that consumers are most interested in.
ACR being what? Automatic content recognition or something like
that's
that?
That's right.
We know that in the last year, because of the availability of smart TV sets and smart TV, they have become the new way for new networks, particularly networks that are owned and operated by people of color or communities of color, to get distributed. Are you finding that there are certain genres of channels, lifestyle, scripted, unscripted reality, game show, et cetera, are getting more interest level in terms of channel development than others, or channel acceptance by the public than others?
Oh. It's an interesting question. What I would say that is part of Vizio's core when it comes to programming and content acquisition for me and my team is making sure that we have something that's interesting for every consumer. So I know you're saying, you know, is there some portion of that content that is more often adopted by a consumer? And overall, yeah, I mean, do we see that you know, movie and TV show channels are one of the most popular genres? Absolutely. But that doesn't mean that some of those niche genres aren't doing equally well.
How do you make sure that those niche or specialty channels, no matter where they come from, are getting adequate promotion and publicity through your infrastructure?
So Vizio SmartCast is our owned and operated system that allows us to essentially put content in front of consumers. It's a very content-forward user interface. So as a part of that, what we're really able to do is offer up familiar faces, familiar names, big titles, or that niche content in a way that brings it to the consumer to the forefront of their experience. So when they click into it, they're going directly to that content. So we're really using our platform to be able to keep consumers aware of what's coming out, to make sure that they understand there's new content, and to give them the opportunity to engage with it and find it in a way they might not otherwise have been able to do.
You are hearing Catherine Pond. She's Vice President of Business Development at Vizio, one of the country and the world's leading smart TV set makers. She joins us live from Irvine, California this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. And we're happy you're along for the ride on this Monday afternoon. Tom and Abba with you live from New York this half hour, and we invite you to be part of the program. All it takes is a phone call from you, so make that call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Don't forget, coming up Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, Donald DeLine. He's one of the executive producers of Chapel Waits, the new epic mystery series based on Stephen King literature. By the way, also executive produced by its star, the Oscar winner from The Pianist, Adrian Brody. Also, we will get in with the executives from Saltbox Television, the senior citizen service that used to be just available in only senior citizen centers, but now is available on smart TV sets and devices, and is getting more into original programming from its own version of America's Got Talent. Saltbox TV and Chapel Waits, two of the subjects we'll be covering in major detail Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. One of the big things, Catherine, that came out from the new front is that we're seeing more of these smart TV sets, these devices, and these multi-channel bundles create original content. They're no longer just in the distribution business. They're in the content-making business. Roku is Roku Originals. Tubi doing original content. It looks like Pluto TV will do original content. Local Now from Fire Now is going to do original content. It's a multi-channel bundle from the folks behind the Weather Channel and Allen Media Group. And what you did was you were announcing, we're going to do a set of channels. We're going to do channels with outside parties that will be original for us with SmartCast. A gaming esports channel with SubNation, a hip-hop culture channel, a gay and lesbian network, and so forth. Where are we at with that package of services?
Yeah, so we have actually rolled out two of those channels already. The first one was Vizio Fork and Flight, which is essentially the opportunity to explore taste and travel. in a variety of different places. It is doing extraordinarily well on the platform. We're really, really pleased. And again, it kind of goes up back to what you were just asking, Simon. You know, how do we help users discover that content? And it's through our SmartCast home screen. And then the second channel that we launched was Vizio Investigation. And again, tying it back to our conversation about data, we know that SmartCast viewers and our audiences are incredibly interested in kind of real crime investigation. You know, it's very popular in the market generally, but specifically with our viewers. And so we put together that channel. Our programming and engagement team did that. The content acquisition team, my team, went out and brought in the content for that channel. And again, that I think that just launched last week, and we're already seeing great, great traction with that.
And you also are working with Future Day, one of the original multi-channel bundles that's doing original programming or acquired programming as specialty channels. You've got two new services with them.
Yeah, we are continuing to expand very, very quickly, both as far as kind of what I would call standalone third-party applications on the platform, as well as kind of the channel business that you and I have been talking about here through WatchFree+. You know, that experience that's so much like cable, but entirely streaming and free, and then continuing to add more and more apps to our stable with, you know, we announced BET+, we announced Discovery+. If you were listening to our earnings call, you heard us mention that Fubo TV is coming soon. So a ton of new applications being added to the platform.
Mm-hmm. So what about the eSports channel from SubNation? I understand there's one for Short Form Series, Gay and Lesbian, Hip Hop Culture. Where do we stand on some of those services? Are there any other genre or any other subject matters that have now come to light that we can talk about?
Yeah, so it's a great question. I can't tease too much in advance. What I can tell you is some of the ones that you mentioned are still indeed coming, probably rolling out here in the not too distant future. And then as far as other areas that are particularly interesting to us, we certainly see that our consumers are interested in home. We see that they're interested in decor and design and those types of things and kind of the shoulder content that leads into that. So be looking for us to make more and more moves in that curated channel space.
Mm-hmm. Talk about Vizio Voice. We know that more and more smart TV set and device makers, Catherine, are now incorporating artificial intelligence voice features like Siri, like Alexa, Google Assistant, in the set, in the device, so that you can control what you watch or how you use the product with your voice as well as your remote control. What are you getting out of Vizio Voice? What are you hearing from viewers about using it that says, hey, we may be onto something here and we may be able to use this down the road, not too far down the road, for a lot more than just calling up programs?
Yeah, that's a great question. And what I would say kind of as an overarching part of Vizio is the fact that we've always worked well with all of the big players, right? So we've kind of remained agnostic in that respect. And Vizio Voice was the perfect opportunity for us to continue down that path. So we already support Amazon Alexa. We already support Google Assistant. We already support Apple Siri. But with Vizio Voice, we're bringing that capability in-house. And what does that really mean? You know, when you say, are you already seeing engagement trends that would indicate this can be something bigger? Absolutely. And in fact, that's why with Vizio Voice, you can do more than just pull up an app. You can do complex queries, complex searches. And you're going to see us continue to build on that and really create a great experience for our viewers.
Last week, we had David Tice on, who is with Hub Entertainment Research, and they did a study about how Peacock, that's NBC Universal's mega content service, did with their first ever coverage of the Summer Olympics in Tokyo, Japan. They surveyed over 1,000 people, and 12% of that group did watch Peacock for the Olympics coverage. 6% only watched Olympics coverage on Peacock, and a little less than that were first-time users of Peacock. They became subscribers of Peacock because of this. And one of the interesting results that David told us on our program when it was on Friday was that there was a lot of interest in the advertising and that people really liked the ad load, not just the ad load on each hour, but they also liked the interactivity of the ads. And some people even responded, you know what, we will, you know, if we see more of those type of ads, we'll buy product. We'll, you know, we want to use those ads. We love the way the ads look. We love what the ads are saying. And I'm curious whether since May, where we had a lot of talk about interactive advertising, you are hearing from advertisers saying, we want to go interactive. We want to do it with you.
Yeah, it's a great question, and I think it speaks, Simon, to the overall ad experience as well. And we can talk about that in more detail maybe as a follow-on to this. But what I would say, yes, high level, absolutely. Advertisers are interested in interactivity. We already have some advertisers that are working in market with us on this. That can be a variety of different things. That can be things like QR codes. We've done some of those executions. And certainly, honestly, with what you've seen as a result of the kind of the global pandemic and, unfortunately, the way that people have had to interact, QR codes have become much more prolific again. And we've really seen a lot of adoption of those. But we're going to take it beyond that. So, yes, is interactivity interesting? Absolutely. But like I said, I think it speaks to overall ads.
Catherine, how do you want to take it beyond? I was just asking, I didn't interrupt, but I wanted to ask, because you brought it up, how do you want to take it beyond? What do you see as beyond?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's more than QR codes. I think it's the ability to add technology layers to this and make sure if you have that interactive experience that it's the best possible experience for consumers, whether that's voice interaction with an ad or other types of things like that. And that's not me speaking about what Vizio is doing, just about overall ad experience as a whole and what interactivity can offer.
It sounds like doing everything through the TV set as opposed to you do some of it through the TV set and some of it through the smartphone or tablet.
Yeah, I think the more that we can help consumers create that single point to be able to engage and interact, it makes things easier, and if we make their lives easier, they're happier, they engage more. And it goes back to what you were saying, at the beginning of that question, which is how do consumers respond to that ad experience? They want to buy it. They want to engage. They want to interact because they had a good experience.
Mm-hmm. Catherine Pond, Vice President of Business Development for Vizio, one of the leading smart TV makers in the nation, the world. She is our guest this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised, and we want to hear from you. Give us a call, 646-522-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Recently, when Alphabet, a.k.a. Google, had their investor report and conference call, their chief executive officer, in regard to a question by media analyst Michael Nathanson about where is the smart TV ecosystem right now, had this to say. I'm going to give you the quote, and it's almost in its entirety, and then get your response to on the other side. Here's what Santa Picar had to say, or Sakai had to say, and I quote, "There is a shift to these, that smart TV sets and devices, becoming computing devices over time. They're going to be connected computing experiences. People will both consume content passively, actively, including gaming, over-the-top video, and so on. We are working not only with TV providers globally, we are doing it with cable box manufacturers as well. It's a significant investment from our side, making sure we can drive that shift." What do you think about what he had to say?
Yeah, I think the idea that, there's certainly more and more consumption happening in this space. Those relationships are key. And it is going to be, I particularly like the way that he said, whether it's active or passive, we are trying to bring all of those experiences. The TV can be very much a lean back experience, and that's why we have this amazing EPG that we just launched with our WatchFree+. But it can also be a very active experience where users want to search and discover content, and that's why we have Vizio Voice. That's why we're trying to create a very, a user interface that is content forward, so users can find what they want to engage with.
What kind of reaction are you getting to WatchFree, the ability for the viewer to do search and discovery?
Sorry, I missed the first half of that. What was that?
Yeah, I was saying, what has been the early reaction from your audience to WatchFree Plus and the ability for them to do search and discovery?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So we've again, positive feedback from the market, both from our content partners, honestly, as well as from viewers who feel like there's a ton of selection, who feel like, you know, we get the feedback, this is free. And so, you know, they can certainly find what they're looking for. We've done a ton of education as well to make sure that we're getting resources and the ability of TV to do that, to communicate that information to them is amazing too. So overall, again, positive sentiment about being able to find what they're looking for.
Yeah. What is Vizio's thought right now about interactive television? Because it seems right now we're at a very interesting point in the development because of the fact that you now have a way to use and watch and use the TV set with your voice as well as your control. You have Food Network Kitchen, which is now 2 years old. It's not only running on Amazon Fire TV, it's also running on Roku. And they made the announcement, by the way, during that New Fronts week. You have Peloton and Beachbox and other interactive fitness services now using the TV set as well as being connected to the bike. We're hearing about the possibility of interactive scripted television. I mentioned interactive ads before. What's your sense and Vizio's sense about where interactive TV is at? And have you thought about adding Food Network Kitchen or adding Peloton or a fitness service or adding a scripted service when that comes down the road?
Yeah, I can't say too much about all of the potential content partners that we're talking to, but what I can say is if it has a screen, we think that there can be a home for it. So in other words, if there's content that's being played, no matter what that environment is, I think that it can have a home in this connected TV environment in Vizio SmartCast. I'm bullish on that. I believe that there's an opportunity everywhere that content is streaming to create, again, that unified experience on a single device.
Mm-hmm. You know, Catherine, one of the interesting stories that I frankly thought did not get enough attention in the tech press, on CNBC, in Bloomberg, Fox, other places, was the fact that if you have Amazon Cube, Amazon's Fire TV Cube, you now can use Zoom on the television set, as opposed to through your laptop, your desktop, your tablet, et cetera. What do you think about the possibility of Zoom or other video chat service? Portal TV uses video chat. That's a big part of their service, Facebook's smart TV device. What do you think about the whole idea of video chat on the TV set?
Yeah, I mean, just speaking not about Vizio's initiative specifically, but about the future of connected TV, because I think that's really what you and I are talking about too as a whole. The industry has to be prepared for the ability to bring these types of experiences to connected TV. So, could you imagine seeing your family in, 65 inches? That's amazing. I think that certainly is something that resonates with everyone when we talk about how do we deliver even better experiences for consumers. So I think it's definitely top of mind for everyone that's working in this space.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to ask is that back in January, when the Consumer Technology Association had their virtual event, it seemed that it was like a mixed bag for smart TV set and smart TV makers. Your company had its presentation, Samsung did, other people did, and yet there was no panel session on smart TV sets and functionality or devices, nothing on interactive TV, a next-gen panel that seemed to go all over the map. And what seems to still pop up is this is a medium, smart TV sets, smart TV devices. It seems that the American public has discovered your product and other products without a lot of help from the press, without a lot of help from the Consumer Technology Association, without a lot of help from the world at large. And I'm curious what you think about that, that it seems that this is one of those amazing developments of the 21st century that's still fairly new that the public discovered. It wasn't pressed on them by the press or by trade associations or even the industry.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting thought, Simon. I think one of the things that immediately comes to my mind is what we've done with smart TVs is we took a device that consumers already knew and they were familiar with, right? Their phones. And while for all intents and purposes, I mean, Vizio's been in the smart TV market for, oh my gosh, well over a decade now, obviously. But I think it was user adoption of behavior through smartphones that perhaps helped accelerate things in the smart TV space, in the connected TV space. And as for, you know, what have they found and what have they discovered? I mean, you know, I already mentioned it once, and it certainly is unfortunate that as everyone was kind of sheltering in place and coming home, and what we saw was just this incredible engagement and increased adoption. And I think every once in a while there are those kind of inflection points, let's say, that kind of cause a shift, a dramatic shift that then stays as a result of it.
Kevin, final question. One of the bullet points that your PR people gave me was that people, in terms of the future, overall future of TV, is that people are seeking a more immersive home entertainment experience. How immersive do you think it's going to get? Are we going to see, for example, TV a source of virtual worlds, using augmented reality, maybe virtual reality, to go to be into the midst of action? Maybe the ability to be, how immersive do you think we're going to get?
Yeah, I think that's all well within the realm. I have seen some incredible demos over the course of the past, let's call it 6 or 8 months, from partners about some of these things. And what I would say in that immersive experience is, you know, Vizio has already created the best picture quality that's out there. We've created amazing sound experiences with our Dolby technology that we use in our sound bars and TVs, so that you can create that immersive audio experience or that immersive gaming experience. And we're going to continue to push the bounds of that to help consumers begin to see new ways to use their smart TVs in their homes.
It sounds like you think this interactive, immersive world is going to come fast and furious at us a lot more than we think.
I don't know that it's going to be as furious as maybe it's that I see the possibility of what the consumer is looking for, I guess is a good way to say that.
It's a good way to end our conversation. If you see the possibility, that's the starting point to realize the possibility, and we'll see where it goes from here based on some of the people you've seen, and then hopefully some of those people you've seen demos of will be on our program down the road, because we'd love to showcase them. If you want to know more about Vizio and what they're up to in the world of smart TV sets and devices, here's where you go online, Vizio, V-I-Z-I-O.com, it's Vizio.com, and of course you can also go all over the place to various retail stores to find their products as well, but online it's Vizio.com. Captain Pond, thank you again for joining us. A wonderful half hour with you. Let's have you back soon.
Thank you, and congrats on 15 years. You've seen a lot in those 15 years in TV. It's great speaking with you, Simon.
Same here, Captain. Thank you for the thought. Hopefully we will continue to go and cover this field, because it's all about TV's current, but it's also about TV's future. And a lot of great people, by the way, are making it happen, including yourself, and we really appreciate it. Take care, Captain. All the greatest.
Thank you.
Catherine Pond, Vice President of Business Development for Vizio, joining us live from Irvine, California. Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, among our guests, Donald DeLine, the executive producer of the new ethics drama, Chapel Waits, starring Academy Award winner, also executive producer, Adrian Brody. And we'll talk about Saltbox TV, which makes the move from just being seen in senior citizen centers to smart TV products, sets, and devices. If you came in late on today's program, want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to the homepage, blogfree.com/televised. Check out our podcast. And also check out our special website, Smart TV Televised, at podsite.io. We'd love to hear from you. Lots to chew over. So email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Find me on Facebook, LinkedIn, and on Twitter. We love hearing what you have to say, and we do respond within 24 hours, because what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed here are those of the participants. I'm those of Blog Talk Radio and others during this program. Andy Toe is Blog Talk Radio's general manager, with Jay Sonnenberg, head of content. Website service provided by Podsite, the new internet avenue for podcasts. For more details, go to podsite.io. Our web coordinator is guitarist Big Chris. Smart TV Televised, brought to you by Audible.com and Amazon Division. Remember, Audible transformed the way you hear the world. For a free audiobook or two, 1 month trial, it's audibletrial.com/televised. Makes a great gift for you or someone you love. For Smart TV Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a great rest of the week. Back on Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, you know where. Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, our various podcast affiliates as well. Remember, if you haven't been vaccinated, go to your doctor, check your medical records, go to a second opinion if you need to, and make a great choice. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.